All right, ready to jump into another deep dive. This time, we're taking a look at a case that's had a huge impact on how we understand workplace discrimination. McDonnell Douglas Core v. Green. You might be thinking, 1973, really? But stick with us because this one's a landmark case. It's like the foundation for so many discrimination lawsuits even today.
It really is. This case is fascinating because it gave us a framework for proving discrimination when there's no direct evidence. Mm. You know, those situations where you don't have a clear confession from the employer saying, yep, we discriminated.
Right. No smoking gun. So let's paint a picture for everyone. It's the early 70s, and we have Percy Green,
who is a black mechanic working for McDonnell Douglas.
Exactly. And he ends up getting laid off during a round of workforce reductions.
But here's the thing. Green was also a civil rights activist. He was deeply involved in the movement and believed that both his layoff and the company's hiring practices as a whole were racially motivated.
And he wasn't going to stay silent about it. He organized protests,
including a stall-in where protesters blocked access to the plant.
Yeah, definitely got McDonnell Douglas's attention. But it also got Green into some legal hot water.
He was actually arrested and fined for obstructing traffic during that stall-in. That detail becomes important later.
Okay, so fast forward a bit. McDonnell Douglas starts hiring again, and Green applies. He was a qualified mechanic, after all, but they rejected him.
And they pointed to his involvement in those protests, specifically the illegal stall-in, as their reason for not rehiring him. They claimed it showed a lack of respect for the company.
So at this point, Green feels like he's being punished for speaking out against what he believed was racial discrimination.
So he files a complaint with the EEOC,
alleging both racial discrimination and retaliation. He felt like they were retaliating against him for the protests. Mm-hmm. But here's a twist.
The EEOC found probable cause for the retaliation claim, but not for the discrimination claim. It just goes to show how complex these situations can be.
Totally. So the case starts making its way through the legal system. The district court dismissed Green's claims, but then the Court of Appeals reversed the decision on the discrimination claim.
And then it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court. Talk about high stakes.
This is how McDonnell Douglas v. Green becomes this landmark case.
The Supreme Court used this as an opportunity to create a whole new framework for handling discrimination cases under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, especially those cases where there's no direct evidence of discrimination.
Like we were talking about before, no smoking gun, no easy proof. So what did they come up with?
They established a three-step test. It's what we now call the McDonnell Douglas test. It's used to figure out if discrimination actually took place.
Okay, I'm ready. Break it down for us. What's step one?
The first step is establishing what we call a prima facie case of discrimination.
Hold on, prima facie. Can we clarify that for anyone who's not a legal expert? What does that mean?
Sure. Simply put, it means the person bringing the lawsuit, the plaintiff in this case, Green has to show a few things. They have to show that they belong to a protected group. Green, as a black man, did. They also have to show that they were qualified for the job, that they were treated differently in this case, rejected, and that the circumstances suggest discrimination might be a factor.
So, essentially, enough evidence to raise a red flag to say, hey, something's not right here.
Exactly. And if the plaintiff can establish this prima facie case, then the burden shifts to the employer.
So now it's the company's turn to explain themselves.
Right. Step two is the employer's rebuttal. They have to provide a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for their action. In Green's case, McDonnell Douglas pointed to his involvement in the illegal stall-in as justification for not rehiring him.
So they're basically saying, hey, we didn't hire him because of his actions, not because of his race.
Exactly. But there's a third step, and this is where it gets really interesting.
I'm all ears. This is where it gets tricky, right?
Yes, this is where pretext comes in.
Pretext, that's like a cover-up.
It is. It's the plaintiff's turn again. And now they have to try to prove that the employer's given reason is just a fake reason to cover up discrimination.
So it becomes a legal strategy game. How do you even prove pretext? That seems really difficult.
It can be. But, for example, Green could try to show that white employees who engaged in similar misconduct were treated more leniently, or he could present evidence that company policies were applied unevenly. You know, things that suggest a bias against black employees.
So it's about finding those little inconsistencies, those details that might reveal the truth behind the employer's reason.
You got it. The McDonnell Douglas test creates this back and forth to try to give employees a fair shot at proving discrimination, even when there's no direct evidence.
This is making sense. But let's step back and apply all this to Green's case. What did the Supreme Court ultimately decide?
Well, the court said that Green did present a prima facie case of discrimination. They acknowledged that things look suspicious enough to warrant a deeper look.
Okay, so Green wins round one. But what about McDonnell Douglas's rebuttal about the protests? Did the court buy it?
They did. They said employers absolutely have a right to consider illegal acts when making hiring decisions.
Which makes sense. You wouldn't want to hire someone who's shown they don't respect the law.
Exactly. But here's the key. The court made it very clear that while illegal activity can be a legitimate reason for not hiring someone, it cannot be used as a cover for racial discrimination.
So you can't use someone's past mistakes as an excuse to discriminate.
Precisely. The Supreme Court sent the case back down to a lower court to determine if the company's reason for rejecting Green was actually legitimate or just a pretext for discrimination.
So the Supreme Court didn't decide if McDonnell Douglas was guilty or not. They just set the rules of the game, so to speak.
That's right. They established this important legal framework, clarified the principles, and sent it back for further examination.
Wow. It feels like we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, there's so much more.
There's so much more to unpack.
We need to talk about protected versus unprotected activities, how the McDonnell Douglas test has impacted other types of discrimination cases, and how it's being used today.
We've only just begun.
Welcome back to our deep dive into McDonnell Douglas Core v. Green.
We left off with the Supreme Court sending the case back to the lower courts, right? To figure out if the company's reason for not hiring Green was really legit or just a way to discriminate against him.
Exactly. And that's where this whole idea of protected activities comes into play.
Right. Because Green wasn't just any employee. He was a civil rights activist. And the protests were a part of that activism.
Right. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which is the law we're focusing on here, actually has specific provisions that protect employees who are engaged in activities that oppose discriminatory practices.
So even if an employee does something disruptive, as long as it's about protesting discrimination, they're automatically protected.
Well, not quite that simple. The court made a very clear distinction between protests that are lawful and those that are unlawful.
Okay, so there are limits to this protection.
Absolutely. In Green's case, the court said his participation in the legal picketing, that was considered a protected activity.
That makes sense. Peaceful picketing is a pretty established form of protest.
But the stall-in, where they blocked the plant's access roads, that was considered illegal, so it wasn't protected under Title VII.
So even if your heart's in the right place, even if you're fighting for a good cause, you can't just break the law and expect to be shielded by Title VII.
Exactly. And this distinction is crucial for both employers and employees to understand.
It sounds like a real balancing act.
It is.
Employers need to be aware that they can't just punish employees for protesting, even if those protests are targeting their own company.
Right, as long as they're legal protests.
Right. But then employees also need to know that there can be real consequences for illegal actions, even if those actions are part of some kind of activism.
It's all about finding that balance, that line between protecting employee rights and making sure things stay orderly and within the bounds of the law.
You got it. And the McDonnell Douglas test gives us a framework to work with in these situations, especially those messy situations where it's hard to tell if an employer's actions are legitimate or if they're motivated by discrimination. So we've talked a lot about this case, but how much does it actually impact things today? Is the McDonnell Douglas test still the go-to framework for these kinds of employment discrimination cases?
Absolutely. It's had a massive impact on employment law. That three-step framework we've been discussing, the one established in McDonnell Douglas v. Green, is still being used by courts today. We're talking almost 50 years later.
That's amazing. It really shows you how powerful a well-reasoned legal decision can be.
It really does. The McDonnell Douglas test helps ensure fairness and gives us this structured approach to looking at evidence in discrimination cases.
And we're not just talking about race-based discrimination, right?
You're right. While this specific case was focused on racial discrimination, the principles from the McDonnell Douglas test have been applied to lots of other types of discrimination that are prohibited under Title VII. So that includes sex discrimination, religious discrimination, national origin discrimination, all sorts of things.
So it's become this multi-purpose tool to deal with all these different kinds of discrimination that people face in the workplace.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that the McDonnell Douglas test isn't just some abstract legal concept. It has real-world implications for both employers and employees.
Let's get into that. What are the key takeaways for someone who thinks discrimination might be happening to them? What should they keep in mind?
Well, for employers, the biggest takeaway is documentation. If you ever have to defend a decision you made about an employee, Having clear records of why you made that decision is absolutely essential.
So don't just rely on gut feelings or informal explanations.
No, put it in writing. Make it official.
Thorough documentation can help protect employers from these kinds of claims because it can show that their decisions were based on legitimate factors and not on bias.
Right. And for employees, I think the most important lesson is that even when an employer seems to have a perfectly good explanation for their actions, there's still a chance that that reason is just a cover-up for discrimination. And the McDonnell Douglas test gives employees a way to challenge that reason.
So if you think you've been discriminated against, you shouldn't just give up because your employer has what sounds like a reasonable explanation.
You've got to dig a little deeper, look for any inconsistencies. It might even be time to talk to a lawyer. The McDonnell Douglas test really gives employees a tool to try and expose any hidden bias and hold their employers accountable.
It's incredible to think about how a case from 1973 is still shaping things today.
I know, it really highlights just how influential these landmark legal decisions can be. They set precedents that continue to impact how we understand and apply the law for generations.
And it's a reminder that the fight for equality in the workplace is far from over.
Absolutely. McDonnell Douglas v. Green might have happened decades ago, but it's still making a difference. It gives us a framework for addressing these issues, and it encourages us to stay vigilant against discrimination in all its forms.
Well said. This has been really eye-opening. We've learned so much about this complex area of employment law and how these landmark cases can have such a long-lasting impact.
But, you know, as we're wrapping up this part, it's worth thinking about what this case doesn't really address. We've been talking about individual instances of discrimination, but what about the wider systemic problems that allow discrimination to flourish in the first place?
Right. How do we go beyond these individual battles and tackle those root causes? Welcome back. We've been spending this deep dive exploring McDonnell Douglas Core v. Green, a case that really changed the way we handle discrimination cases.
We've covered a lot of ground, the burden-shifting framework, the idea of pretext, and how the court grappled with defining what constitutes a protected activity.
It's been all about Percy Green's individual fight. But as we touched on at the end of part two, this case, while incredibly important, primarily focuses on those individual instances of discrimination.
Right. It gives a powerful legal tool to individuals, but it doesn't fully address those broader systemic issues that allow discrimination to persist.
It's like winning a battle, but not quite winning the war. You know, you might get justice for yourself, but that doesn't mean the whole system changes.
That's a perfect analogy. Think of it as treating the symptoms without addressing the underlying cause of a disease. You might feel better temporarily, but you haven't cured the problem.
So how do we go beyond just these individual cases and start tackling that deeper systemic discrimination?
Yeah.
What are the tools we need to address those root causes?
That's a tough question. There's no single easy answer. It calls for a multi-pronged approach. We need legislation, policy changes, organizational reform, and even a shift in cultural attitudes.
It sounds like we need a whole arsenal of strategies to combat something so ingrained in our systems.
Exactly. And one of the most important tools is data collection and analysis. By gathering data on things like hiring practices, promotions, pay gaps, and other employment decisions, we can start to see patterns of bias that might otherwise remain hidden.
So we're using data to illuminate those systemic issues, making the invisible visible.
Precisely. And once those patterns are revealed, organizations can take concrete steps, implement targeted interventions to tackle the problem head on. This could involve revamping hiring processes, instituting diversity and inclusion training, or creating mentorship programs for underrepresented groups.
So it's about moving beyond simply responding to complaints. It's about proactively creating a more equitable workplace.
That's the key.
Right.
And this kind of proactive approach requires buy-in from leadership, a genuine commitment to breaking down those systemic barriers to equal opportunity.
It's not enough to just talk about diversity.
Right. You have to be willing to put in the work to really examine your organization's practices and make the necessary changes.
And that work is ongoing.
It is. It's not a one-and-done deal. It takes constant evaluation, adaptation, and a willingness to learn and evolve.
It's a journey, not a destination.
Well said. And while the McDonnell-Douglas test might not be the ultimate solution for dismantling systemic discrimination, it's still an indispensable tool for individuals seeking justice.
It gives them a voice, a platform to challenge unfair treatment.
And those individual victories, while they might not solve the whole problem on their own, can contribute to broader societal change. They can raise awareness, spur critical conversations, and inspire others to demand better.
They can be those sparks that ignite a movement.
Exactly. So as we wrap up this deep dive into McDonnell-Douglas Gore v. Green, it's important to remember that the fight for true workplace equality is far from over, even though we've made progress.
It's a fight that demands our continued attention, our persistence, and a collective effort to build a world where everyone has a fair chance to succeed, regardless of race, gender, religion, or any other characteristic.
It's a fight worth having, a fight for a more just and equitable future. A future where cases like Percy Green's serve as reminders of how hard we had to fight for what should have been a fundamental right all along.
That's a powerful thought to leave us with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with another fascinating case that shaped the legal landscape and continues to resonate today. Until then, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better world.